willkommen zum Subcast, dem Podcast von zwei mittelalten Hobby-Stand-Up-Paddlern, die eines Tages einen Anfall von Größenwahn hatten und sich vorgenommen haben, die 11 Cities Tour, das sind über 200 Kilometer in 5 Tagen, im September 2023 zu paddeln. Das ist die 4. Folge und wir sind Marie und
Stefan.
Herzlich willkommen.
Herzlich willkommen. Eines vorweg, wir nehmen das mal über Skype auf. Ich bin kränklich, kein Corona, aber doch im Bett gewesen die letzten 2-3 Tage. Deswegen können wir nicht in einer Live-Situation aufnehmen. Entschuldigt bitte die schlechtere Tonqualität. Wir hoffen, dass wir euch trotzdem einen hörenswerten Podcast präsentieren können, denn dieses Mal haben wir eine Expertin für die 11 Cities Tour am Mikrofon, und zwar die Maraye Elcheresma. Ich hoffe, ich habe den Namen jetzt nicht ganz zu schlimm ausgesprochen. Sie ist Niederländerin und ist im Veranstalterboard der 11 Cities Subtour eine der Hauptveranstalterin des Events. Sie hat uns einige Infos aus erster Hand gegeben, was die 11 Cities betrifft. Die 11 Cities hat übrigens nächstes Jahr ihr 15. Jubiläum. Das heißt, wir werden zur Jubiläumsausgabe dort starten.
Yay!
Yes. Und sie hat uns einige sehr, sehr interessante Sachen gesagt, rund um die Geschichte des 11 Cities und auch einige Tipps gegeben, wie es abläuft und was man in welchen Situationen machen sollte. Das Interview ist auf Englisch gehalten. Eine deutsche Übersetzung, danke Marie, wird sich dann auf unserer Webseite subcast.at befinden.
Ja, aber bevor wir jetzt mit der Maraye sprechen, hätte ich noch eine andere Frage an dich. Wie ist es dir in den letzten Wochen ergangen mit dem Training?
Trainingszustand. Wie schon gesagt, momentan bin ich krank. Ich habe es beim letzten HIIT-Training auch gemerkt, dass die Lunge nicht so mitgemacht hat wie üblich. Es hat sich danach herausgestellt, kein Corona, aber wohl eine Verkühlung. Prinzipiell gesagt, ja, ich paddle jetzt kräftiger, kommt mir vor.
Juhu.
Es ist auch die Anzahl der Meter pro Stroke leicht gestiegen. Ist jetzt bei 2,64 oder sowas. Unsere Pulswerte, wir machen ja immer nach jedem Training einen Vergleich unserer Trainingszahlenwerte, so aussagekräftig oder so weniger aussagekräftig, die auch sein mögen, dazu in einem anderen Podcast mehr. Aber wir vergleichen es halt einmal so spaßweise. Und was interessant ist, unsere Pulswerte, die davor bei mir viel höher waren als bei dir, gleicht sich jetzt schön langsam an. Also der Höchstpuls bei 285 herum.
185,
ja. Der VO2 Max-Wert, also die Sauerstoffaufnahme, die steigen sollte, sinkt weiter und weiter. Ich bin jetzt von gerade mal okay auf nicht mehr ganz so okay gesunken, laut den Auswertungsalgorithmen von der Software unserer Uhr. Wieso das so ist und ob das schlimm ist, dazu werden wir mal mit unserem Trainer reden müssen. Ich habe den Verdacht, dass der Wert nicht so hundertprozentig aussagekräftig sein wird, weil VO2 Max, das heißt, wie viel Sauerstoff nehme ich pro Atemzug auf oder wie viel kann ich behalten und verbrennen sozusagen. Das wird normalerweise ja am Laufband und mit einer Atemmaske gemessen, wo wirklich der Sauerstoffgehalt dann gemessen wird, inwieweit eine Pulsuhr das gut erraten kann, das ist eine andere Sache. Aber wie gesagt, da werden wir mal mit unserem Trainer fragen, was es damit auf sich hat und ob ich in 2 Monaten dann mich zur Ruhe setzen muss, weil ich keinen Sauerstoff mehr aufnehme oder so.
Ja, kannst in Frühpension gehen.
Genau, kann in Frühpension gehen. Ich merke außerdem, dass sich die Belastung höchstwahrscheinlich durchs kräftigere Paddeln von den Händen und Armen auf die Schultern verlegt hat. Ja, wenn ich jetzt intensiv gepaddelt bin, dann spüre ich es eher in den Schultern als in den Armen, wie es vorher war. Ich führe das zurück auf die andere Art zu paddeln, auf die kräftigere Art zu paddeln, und ich werde auch mit dem Trainer reden, inwieweit man da spezielle Schulterübungen machen kann zusätzlich. Aber Marie, wie ist es dir ergangen?
Na, also ich kann nur sagen, dass am 18. September war ja der letzte Tag von der 14. Ausgabe der 11 Cities Tour. Und da ist auf den Fotos ziemlich klar geworden, dass es sehr kalt war, sehr windig und auch geregnet hat. Und weil wir ja optimal trainieren wollen, hat sich auch das Wiener Wetter solidarisch erklärt und ist seitdem grauselig. Ja. Und das sind halt so Sachen, dass wir bei strahlendem Sonnenschein losgefahren sind, kein Wind und es war sehr warm, und geendet hat es dann mit Windböen bis zu 30 km/h und sehr starkem Regen. Aber wir müssen ja trainieren, nicht? Also auch in allen Wetterbedingungen, damit wir das schaffen können. Da sind natürlich dann die ersten Sachen aufgekommen, wie kalte Zehen und kalte Finger. Und da hast ja du, mein geliebter Stefan, das Weihnachtsgeschenk schon für mich sozusagen vorausgeschenkt. Mhm. Und zwar habe ich gekriegt elektrisch beheizbare Socken. Ich habe sie noch nicht ausprobiert, aber das kommt sicher in den nächsten Tagen, wenn ich da jetzt so aus dem Fenster rausschaue und 11 Grad und stark bewölkt, sagt die Wetter-App.
Mhm. Es ist ganz arg vom Wetter her. Wenn man rundherum schaut, in Deutschland melden sich 20 Grad. Ich habe gestern ein Foto aus Genua gesehen, wo die Leute im Badeanzug am Strand sind. Ja. Offensichtlich ist es wieder mal Wien.
Ja, aber die haben halt kein solidarisches Wetter.
Genau.
Ja. Also, so bei schönem Wetter kann jeder paddeln. Also.
Ja, das ist korrekt. Von mir macht das jetzt, glaube ich, relativ wenig aus. Ich paddel eigentlich ganz gerne bei Regen, muss ich sagen. Das machst du ja nicht so gern.
Nein.
Ja, das ist mir nicht so schlimm. Mein Trockenanzug ist ja nicht ganz, ganz dicht. Deswegen habe ich Kleber gekauft, um Trockenanzüge versiegeln zu können. Der ist gekommen. Und wir können nächsten Tage für die Wintertrainings unsere Trockenanzüge noch einmal richtig auf Vordermann bringen.
Sehr gut. Und dann hat natürlich auch die Zeitumstellung hat schon vorangekündigt. Und natürlich geht natürlich nicht, dass man bei der Arbeit immer rausgeht, wann es einem passt. Und somit sind wir in den Genuss gekommen, dass wir erstmals in der Nacht gepaddelt sind.
Und ja, es war 6 Uhr abends, aber es war stockfinster, stimmt.
Genau, stockfinster. Und es war eigentlich ein bisschen eine Herausforderung, weil wenn es finster ist, habe ich eine Weile gebraucht, bis ich wirklich meine Balance an Bord gefunden habe. Also okay. Das hat eine Weile gedauert. Und natürlich im Finstern siehst du auch die Wellen nicht. Also wenn du ein Boot vorbeifährt, noch dazu war das Boot ja unbeleuchtet und wir haben es auch nicht gekehrt. Mhm. Und da sind schon dann die Wellen ganz plötzlich aufgetaucht, da haben wir ein bisschen schwer getan. Und natürlich kam dann noch hinzu, dass meine Brillen pausenlos angelaufen sind. Ich weiß nicht warum, aber jetzt war es finster und ich habe nur mehr nebelig durch meine Brillengläser gesehen. Und das mit einem HIIT-Training kombiniert war ein bisschen eine Herausforderung. Aber was mir viel getaugt hat, war, dass wir ja unser Stammrevier, die alte Donau, einmal aus einem ganz anderen Blickwinkel gesehen haben.
Ja,
das war schon sehr schön.
Das war wunderschön, finde ich. Für die Nicht-Wiener, die alte Donau ist ein ein toter Seitenarm der Donau, circa 5 Kilometer lang, leicht gebogen und an und für sich Schilf, relativ viele Strände mit Wiesen etc., relativ viele Kleingartensiedlungen, aber ganz in unmittelbarer Nähe ist halt auch die Uno City und die sogenannte Donauplatte mit den höchsten Hochhäusern von Wien. Das heißt, es gibt eine relativ interessante Mischung von Natur und Urban. Und wenn man jetzt nachts draußen ist, dann seien halt die Großstadtlichter gemischt mit den dunklen Stellen und den Lampen von den Promenaden, die an der alten Donau entlang gehen. Das hat wirklich was ganz Eigenes, finde ich.
Ja, das war schon sehr schön. Ja. Ja, und die Straßenbahn erbaut hat auch noch offen gehabt, also haben wir nachher noch was zum Essen gekriegt. Also das war sehr fein. Körperlich muss ich sagen, diese langen neuen, also wo man 3 Minuten richtig Sprint paddeln muss, haben bei mir dann doch einen Muskelkater hinterlassen.
Ah.
Ja, doch. Also. Doch. aber wir tun ja das alles, damit wir nächstes Jahr bei 11 Cities Tour brillieren können. Und so wie du schon angekündigt hast, haben wir ja mit der Mareihe gesprochen, einer der Organisatorinnen von der 11 Cities Tour. Und ich glaube, das sollten wir jetzt beginnen. Was sagst du?
Genau. Mit dem Brillieren weiß ich es nicht. Mir ist recht. Also mein Ziel ist definitiv, durchzukommen.
Das ist ja schon brillant für uns.
Ja, für uns. Wir brillieren für uns selbst.
Ja.
Ja, genau. Aber das Ziel ist einfach 5 Tage. Das sind immerhin ungefähr das Äquivalent von 5 Marathons hintereinander, wenn man es auf Laufen umsetzen würde. Also an 5 aufeinanderfolgenden Tagen. Die Ultradistanzpaddler wie der Chris, den wir letztens interviewt haben, die sagen da natürlich, ja, da bin ich noch nicht einmal richtig warm gelaufen nach 42, 45 Kilometern. Aber für uns ist das, glaube ich, wird es schon genug sein. Wir brauchen nicht auch noch Zeit fahren.
Ich glaube, dass das mehr als genug sein wird.
Ja, denke ich. Genau, dann starten wir mit dem Interview.
Genau.
Viel Spaß.
Dear Mariah, welcome to our podcast, subcast.at. We are very, very glad to have you today because you are one of the organizers of the 11 City Tours.
That's correct. And thanks for it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mariah, we're just going right into it. And my first question is, please tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Mariah. And when you say it in Dutch, it's Marije. But like I just told you guys, it's a little easy to say Mariah. Because of the J in it, I heard like many versions of my name, but this is the easy one. I'm 42 years old and I've been stand-up paddling since 2008. At the time, I was working already in the windsurfing industry, and we thought like stand-up paddling, it's gonna happen like straight away, 2008. And that didn't really happen yet. And I think that was also, yeah, no, it was the year that Anne-Marie, the founder of the Sub 11 City Tour, did her first trial of paddling the whole route. And yeah, then I think only in 2013, it really took off in Holland and maybe even like in the whole world. But I never was into long distance paddling only in the waves. I thought it was actually boring to be honest, to do the long distance.
Really?
No, I really liked it in the waves, and I did it like a lot whenever I was in either in Tarifa or in South Africa. I was taking my board, but then I got to know the longer version of a board as well. And then it got me. And that was in 2013. And then I realized, maybe it is something. It is something nice to do like an endurance sport.
So you are working in the windsurf industries.
Yeah.
So the wave thing is a bit obvious, isn't it? And so when you started to paddle long distance, how did you train for that?
Luckily, I had like I teamed up with José and Tineke, and they were involved into the grown of like the sports in Holland as well, because of their stand-up paddle school. And José was already experienced in running marathons and that kind of the endurance side of sports. And I used to play basketball, I windsurf, surf, and then stand up paddling in the waves. And I was like, how do I do this? Like, how can I cope with paddling maybe for like 8 hours on the day? Because I wasn't really fast.
Okay. And how did you learn?
Yeah, no, it was, I think just by starting for like maybe paddling more than like an hour or 2 hours, and then it went to 3 hours, and then slowly you're getting into that groove, you're like, oh, wait, but your heart rate is actually pretty low. So it's not that you're like pretty exhausted after paddling of 3 hours. It's more like your body is maybe aching, but it's not like that I was like really tired, like how I used to play a basketball game. So I had to probably eat a bit more then after 3 hours of paddling. So I just went slowly into it. And then, of course, technique helped as well. So we had some technique training from Ricardo Haversmith back in 2013. And I think the whole combination made it work for me.
Okay. I have a question for you just to know, because I love long distance paddling, but I have a problem. I get bored after a while.
the funny thing is, and I only realized that a couple of months ago, when I trained for the 11 cities, I never paddled on my own. So we always paddled like with the two of us or the three of us, Tineke, José and myself. So we talked for hours. I think we never stopped talking.
And okay.
So that is, I think, the difference. Like if you're paddling on your own, I can imagine that you are. But that's why I think it's good you guys are there, so people can put on a podcast while paddling and training.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. Do you paddle other long distance races as well, or no. Endurance?
No, I to be honest, I 2013 I did the 5 day one, and yeah, we finished last every day, but probably because of the talking as well. But I really liked it. I you felt like how cool it was actually to paddle the 200 plus K, because I'm from up in the north, I'm from Friesland. So I thought it was a really cool way of experience my own province. Then in 2014, I trained together with José towards the non-stop. Unfortunately, I had to give up after 100K, after, I think if I remember well, after 18 hours of paddling. And then in 2015, I paddled the 100K that I didn't really like while doing the nonstop. That was basically the first 2 days of the 5 day event. I paddled those days, and then I never really paddled long distances anymore. And maybe it's because of the nonstop that I had to quit, but maybe also a little less time to actually paddle.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
I got one question. Did you ever, because the 11 Cities Sub Tour is derived or is in spirit of the 11 Cities Skating Tour, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Which is a very long-lasting event in the Netherlands. Did you ever participate in that?
No. I did see, like, with my like full knowledge, the one in 97, the last one that was held and like able to run. And it's something magical. Like, I think people who haven't experienced it, they don't really know what it's like. But I'm glad I did experience the just to be there, to actually be on the ice and on the side and waking up early. It's, yeah, a special thing.
Yeah, it's taking place nowadays mostly in Austria here, the at the Weißensee.
Yeah.
In January every year, and we've been there to ice skate a little bit, a few days, and from one day to the next, all was full of people from the Netherlands. It was crazy.
I know, we are a little crazy. Yeah. But at least you have a lake where you can do it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And all the menus changed from one day to the other.
There were Netherlandish flags, everything. It was practically from overnight, it was a colony of the Netherlands.
And do you know how many people actually do the alternative 11 city tour there?
I don't know.
But it was hundreds.
Many hundreds.
Yeah. And it was so funny because we are not really experienced ice skaters. And so there we saw like elderly ladies and they were just like cruising. And they were like
talking, chatting.
Yeah. And they were just overtaking us lap by lap by lap. This was amazing.
Cool.
Yeah. Yes.
So Stephen asked me, we were talking to you, and Stephen had a very interesting question. Do you want to ask yourself or shall I?
Yeah, what's with my impression is that you Dutch people have something for long distances, even if you said that you didn't like it so much. But you've got one of the most famous endurance paddlers, Bart De Zwart, if I'm pronouncing it right.
Yeah, correct. And
what's the thing with Dutch people going so far?
Well, I think first of all, is because we have a lot of waterways, and even if you don't live up in the north, there are many waterways to connect. And I've been training when I was like back in 2013, 14. I was spending the winter in Cape Town, and then imagine training on the same canal that's only 2K long. Mm-hmm. And it's even man-made. It's not like the nature did it. No, it's the man-made one. Yeah. And to be honest, I mean, we have had some guys and girls from Cape Town before, but I would not be able probably, but that's because of my background of probably the faster sports, mm-hmm. To paddle, I don't know, 40K on a 2K canal. I mean, that is and I think that's why. And even though Bart De Zwart, he has been training, maybe not that much here in Holland, but of course on Maui where he's living. I think we have that, and also maybe the connection. If you look at like the long distance, of course, the 11 City Tour, it's the longest running event at the moment in the world, and. Mm-hmm. It might be also the connection, of course, as a Dutch person to the event.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you became one of the organizers of the 11 Cities Tour, right?
Yeah, correct.
When was that?
Basically, after I finished 2013, my five-day event. And then Anne-Marie asked me because someone was leaving the board. And then because my connections within the windsurfing and kitesurfing industry, knowledge of event organizing, I got my place in, and that's like 9 years ago now.
And do you still enjoy it?
Yeah, 100%. It's a voluntarily job, so solely run on volunteers. So Ritske and Kiki and myself, we are in the board, and we're not getting paid. We're only getting an amount of money that is allowed to get as a volunteer in a non-profit organization. And I can tell you the hours we put in, that's not covering it. But I think the experience, the connections all over the world, that makes it why we still run it all voluntarily.
Okay. So what are the biggest challenges?
As you can imagine, like the logistics side is for every day the biggest thing. And back in 20, I think it was 16, when Bruno and Daniel and Sulio entered for the first time, we had no clue. We didn't know their names. We were like, okay, two brothers, that's nice. But then when they paddled and we used the trackers for safety to see on the map where the athletes are, we saw the trackers going crazy, like fast. And we're like, oh, wait, we have a certain time to pack up the start, be in time at the first break in Snake, one of the first cities which you pass on day one. But then we need to be in time in Sloten, where everyone finishes on day one. And we're like, holy moly, are we going to make this before Daniel and Bruno are arriving? And those kind of things. And of course, you experience that one day. And then for the next day, we had to plan the same evening. Okay, how are we going to do this? We need to reschedule everything because those guys are fast.
Okay.
So logistics is a big thing.
Okay, do you, because we already registered for next year.
I saw that.
Yes.
I saw that.
I hope we did it right because we were a bit confused. is it right? Are we for the right challenge?
Let me have a look. I see, Malise, you are in the solo tour. Yeah. And Stefan, you as well.
Yeah.
And you enter for sleeping in the houses.
Yes. That's what we planned.
Perfect.
Okay, so everything's all right.
Everything is fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Another question. We are a little bit older than you and didn't paddle until four years ago and never made such a distance. We are we've got a coach. And we've got still plenty of time, so I think we'll make it. But have you any tips for the average paddler
who enters the first time?
First time,
like you, absolutely in time. Especially you have been paddling already for some years, so you know what to do. And I think I assume you have at least a 14 foot board.
Yes.
Yes. But inflatable.
But I hope they are like the newest ones. So if they're like, if you can inflate them pretty hard, then then I'm sure it will work out. I think you at least need to experience, and maybe if you do that like the latest in maybe June, experience one day of paddling from 9 a.m. and then a 45K tour.
Mm-hmm.
Because and that's how I experienced myself, it is a mind thing as well. It's not only physical. It's I mean, like you say, Malise, you are getting bored at one point. Maybe at one point you're getting a little tired as well. But I think when you know you can paddle at least that one day, the 45K, which are like four of them are around that length, then your mind says, hey, but I can do 45K. I can then sleep. I can like eat, sleep, and then you do it again. Then you know in your mind you're able to fix it. And I think that helps a lot. And if you think you want to, I mean, we have still a beautiful autumn days here, like still 20 degrees at the moment. Even if you think you want to know it already now, I would say, why not paddle already 45K? Just do it.
Because we have our coach is a very mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells us exactly what we are allowed to do and what we are not allowed to do. And we do negotiate with him now and then.
Yeah.
But he says, because he's... I'm missing the word. Sportwissenschaftler. He studies sports.
Scientist, yes.
Yeah. And and we are the first persons he trains for endurance.
Yeah.
Because normally he trains people for the long distance races up to 12 kilometers.
Yeah.
And when we started, he kind of looked at us with he was rolling his eyes, and he was like, oh, really? Two over 50-year-olds are getting in a midlife crisis, and do want to do that. But in the meantime, I guess we convinced him that we really want to do it. And so, yes, we are very, very hard-minded that we're going to do that, and we can do it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look, and not maybe even now, but I think the majority of the entries are absolutely above 40 plus and maybe even 50 plus in total.
All and right.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see. So I think it's absolutely not like bad that you are over 50. And I think even maybe better, because I mean, then you're still up for some paddling and doing sports. So, 100% really good. But yeah, it is a mind thing. It is like as long as your like basic fitness is like good enough and you know how to handle, because that's the other thing, the nutrition during like throughout the day. Don't stop drinking and eating, because I mean, you need to fuel your body when you paddle for like 6 to 8 hours a day. And that is one other important aspect as well. But I'm sure your coach will be able to arrange that with you guys.
Yes, yeah. It starts in March next year. He already told us so.
Yeah.
Right now we are allowed to eat whatever we want, but in March it will change. And I have another question, because we talked to a guy in another podcast of Supercast who was a participant in 11 cities, and he said one of the challenges was were the waves.
Yeah. So,
and the wind. So can you tell us something about the waves and the wind, because that really scares me.
This year was, because this guy, he was, what is his name again? Because I think I saw him
Stefan, do you know his name by hand?
It's Moussakos.
Of course. Yeah. He wasn't here this year, but
two years ago.
The tricky part is, of course, September. It can be really like nice, warm, no wind, but then the next day it can be a southeaster or a southwesterly wind, and then most of the time you always have it as a headwind. And I can only say, whenever you might have a windy day in Austria, go on the board and experience how it is to paddle in the wind, and even with side wind. Then if you will be training on a lake, make sure to find out how it is to maybe paddle for half an hour on the same side, because you're not able to, I mean, you can switch, but then you will be blown to the other side. And then it means you need to pedal on one side.
One side, yes. We experienced that a little bit. We took part of the Vogalonga. You know the Vogalonga? It's in Venice, but it's a regatta for rowing boats, etc. But you can also participate with soups, and we... This was, in fact, our first longer. It's about 30 kilometers. And there, in fact, on the turning back from Burano to Venice, we had wind from right.
Yeah, the whole right time.
Side, and no way to to do anything than keep strong and paddle on, no?
And that is what it is. Like, of course, you can stop and you can go on the knees when it's really necessarily. And especially in the tour category, you can, I would say, do whatever you want to do to keep yourself safe. But that is one really good lesson. Tatum Prince, she's from Cape Town. And she was the first woman to do the nonstop and the 5-day on a stand-up paddleboard.
Okay.
At the same edition, so only with a 2-day break. But she used to do a lot of adventure races. And what they do, and I think your trainer, your coach will tell it as well, and basically that's how I explain it as well, but maybe put it a little differently now, is whatever you train or experience at home, then you will know what it will be like when it's coming, for example, in towards the Sub 11 City Tour. So try to find that 45K day. Try to find the wind. Try to find a lake with some waves if it's windy. Because then you know how to handle your board, how to handle, maybe even better, how to handle your mind, not to freak out if it might be windy. Because, I mean, this year it was quite hectic, I have to admit. So the experience in finding the different circumstances, I think that is how you become a stronger paddler.
Okay. Yeah, we are doing some whitewater sup. And we also have a lake right around the corner, which is famous for its winds. So we're gonna try and do a lot there next summer. So
cool.
Yeah. And we also go paddling when it's raining, snowing, ice.
Yeah.
So we have no respect for the weather.
You cannot just embrace it, I think. Indeed.
Yeah. As long as there's somewhere where after paddling where I can go and it's warm and I get something to eat, I'm happy.
Exactly.
So do you have why are only 150 people allowed to paddle? Is there a reason to it?
Yes, and it's basically the safety in the first place, because imagine having 150 people on a stretch of 45K, we can't be anywhere, like everywhere, of course. We have safety boats, we have people on the land, we have the safety trackers. But imagine 250 and something happens where we can't be that fast, or because, I mean, there is not always a road next to the waterway where you're paddling. So it is... that in the first place, but then again, also logistics, because we only can take that many sleeping boats. We can only rent that many sleeping places in the houses. And we would like to keep the safety is, I think, most important, but then also the family feeling. When you become bigger, and we are bigger than like 4 or 5 years ago. But with 150, you're still able to connect with all the people who we haven't met. And that is one important aspect as well.
This is wonderful.
Yeah.
So do accidents happen?
Yes. I think the biggest thing is, which is happening every year, people knocking their heads against the bridge.
Okay.
Yeah. I saw quite some photos this year.
Yeah. Like I say, that is, and of course, if it's going really hard, it can become a pretty bad accident. But luckily, we never had like really bad things. I would say they only ended up with stitches, and then that was the hardest thing. And then last year we had and we still can't really find the reason why it happened, but on day one it was really warm, and we had four times that we had to call the ambulance, and that was because of the probably lack of water drinking, and that resulted in cramps.
Okay.
We still don't know if this was like related to any of the COVID vaccinations, that it was a coincidence. We still don't know, because the symptoms were all the same, and we never had it before in that time, 13 years time, we never had it, and we did have warm days before. So that was, I would say, the first day was really hectic. We were in the evening, we couldn't believe that it actually happened. Luckily, no really bad things in the end. So that was last year, but luckily, that's it. I would say the bridge knocking, that is the biggest thing, and that is always happening. People are like really fanatic, of course, and then they focus maybe a little less to stand up or go down early enough or stand down long enough. So
because the bridges are pretty low sometimes.
You have to lay down.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay. I'm not able to train that in Vienna.
No.
This is gonna be hard unless we build ourselves a bridge or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Or just pretend there is a bridge.
Yes. But we are doing it because of the fun and because we want to do it. And so I'm not fanatic that I want to win. I'm happy when I'm coming last, but I just want to do it.
You want to finish. You want to have the cross, the finish cross.
Yes, I already have a space in my apartment where I'm going to hang the medal.
Cool.
Yeah. And the best thing is to arrive a day before the 11 cities starts, or is it okay to arrive on the actual first day?
No, I would suggest, and also the accommodation starts from then, the Tuesday, in this case, because then we have the registration in the afternoon, and then we always do the famous prologue. It's only a 5K round through the city of Leeuwarden, and we're going to put a bit more effort in it for upcoming year, because then it's the 15th anniversary.
Oh, really?
Great.
Yeah, 1-5. It's pretty special, I would say. But we always do that one round where everyone has to paddle. We have the following boats where the crew can be on. And then you can dress something like where you're from, we had funny things from Austria. You have some specific clothing. Maybe you can wear that on the board just to make sure everyone knows you from Austria, for example. And then the evening is like, of course, opening dinner, opening talk from us, and then. Yeah, the preparation is actually then done, and then you wake up around 7 probably, and then you have to start paddling at 8:30, 9 o'clock on the Wednesday.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yep. And I already read there's a shuttle between the houses and the starting points, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, perfect. That's perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Good. So we are going to keep on training, and we're really, really looking forward to meeting you in person.
I can't wait either.
And I hope we can make another podcast after the 11 cities, if we are able to talk. Otherwise, you have to talk for 30 minutes, which should be a problem. Thank you. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Taking the time, and we wish you all the best, and we are very much looking forward to it. Thank you.
See you next year in September.
Yes. See you next year in September.
Okay. All the best.
Bye-bye. Bye. So, Stefan, jetzt haben wir ja vieles gehört, was bei der 11 Cities Tour passieren kann. Willst du trotzdem noch mit paddeln?
Ja, definitiv.
Ah, das ist sehr gut.
Seit ich gehört habe, dass man auch im Zweifelsfall, wenn gar nichts mehr geht, sitzen kann.
Ja, aber nur für die nicht wettkampfmäßig teilnehmen. Gell?
Genau, aber für uns schon. Also.
Ja, für uns schon. Wir dürfen uns hinsetzen, wenn es nicht mehr geht.
Wir dürfen, wenn wir wollen, die ganze Strecke im Sitzen fahren. Ich weiß nicht, ob das gescheit ist.
Es heißt ja nicht Sitzpaddeln, es heißt ja Stehpaddeln.
Oh, immer der alte Witz.
Ja.
Okay. Das heißt nicht Sitzpaddeln, sondern Stehpaddeln. Natürlich. Genau. Ich bin aber froh, dass man unter Umständen auf die Knie darf, wenn zum Beispiel in den exponierteren Stellen, wo unter Umständen mit 1 Meter hohen Wellen zu rechnen ist, also wenn man da nicht denkt, die ganze Strecke stehen muss. Das klingt schon mal gut.
Ja, genau. So, das war's dann für heute, oder? Hast du noch was beizufügen? Na gut, dann abspannen.
Liebe Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer, das war das Interview mit der Veranstalterin oder Mitveranstalterin der 11 City Subtour, Maraye El Kheirezmi. Wie gesagt, ihr könnt die Übersetzung des Interviews in schriftlicher Form auf unserer Webseite subcast.at finden. Feedback und Fragen bitte ebenfalls dort oder per E-Mail einfach unter team@subcast.at. Das war's für heute. Habt eine gute Zeit.
Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und bis zum nächsten Mal.